It's 8:36 on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. I'm glad you're listening. And here's where I remind you that we are also online as well as on the radio. There all the time. The program is a 24-hour-a-day presence on the web at jeffexchange.org, which gives you a chance to catch up on past recordings of the Jefferson Exchange and look ahead to the next edition of the program. It contains, as does all the pages at the parent site, ijpr.org, a listen live link at the top. So you can listen live to any of the three services of JPR through your web browser or your app. And the app is free for smartphones. I know I pointed out a few times. You can also take part in the program as it happens. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Last spring, as people were generally stuck at home looking for things to do, we became aware of an upswing in gardening. More people apparently thought, why not grow my own food and some decorative plants? So we reached out to the Jackson County Master Gardeners Association and got connected to Lynn Kunstman, who is a master gardener and a master food preserver and quite a few other things. Now that the heart of the growing season is over, she visits us with us once a month. And this is good timing since frost is expected tonight. So Lynn, welcome back with the frost.
Hey, thanks very much.
I was looking at my notes from last visit. It's kind of, what a difference a month makes. I was asking you then about how heat-stressed your plants were looking.
You're right. Yeah, it's been a big dive since then, right?
Indeed. So, I mean, yeah. You obviously know the rhythm of the seasons well, and I'm sure keep a calendar. But are there things you could have taken in from the garden that you've left out until now?
Yeah, no, I still have, today, my husband and I will be gathering in all the peppers because we're going to be getting these, we've got freeze warnings coming, frost warnings tonight and tomorrow night, I think, and then I think we've got a 20-degree night coming up soon, and that's a killing frost.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to take everything out, you know, all the summer vegetables out. So you want to bring in all of your green tomatoes to ripen on the counter. Bring in all your peppers and eggplants. And the winter squash are probably okay during the frost. The vines will maybe die, but the pumpkins and squash are okay out there, those hard-shelled squash. And you can gather them in even after the frost. Just remember to leave some stem on those when you bring them in.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're slightly underripe, they might ripen up the rest of the way in storage. Not necessarily. It depends on how mature they are when you actually bring them in.
First of all, the stem on the squash, just for what? To keep it from rotting?
Right. If you remove the squash and you snap the stem off, it leaves it's like an open wound. It's kind of like pulling the umbilical cord off too soon.
Uh-huh.
You know, you want to let that dry. I mean, it leaves an opening for, you know, molds and fungus and that kind of stuff. So you want to take your clippers out with you when you're collecting your pumpkins and squash, and just leave at least a half an inch of stem on those.
Mm-hmm.
That you want to store. Anything you're using right away, it doesn't matter.
Right.
And if you're bringing in less mature winter squash, use those first, and leave the ones with the good, hard, you know, darkly colored orange or yellow skins to put in storage. They'll last until, you know, March or even later. I've had winter squash in May.
Wow.
That I've had, you know, stored in a cabinet in my garage.
Mm-hmm.
They do last a long time.
Now, you were talking about, I was going to ask you about this anyway, but I can see there are degrees of differences. I mean, there's a frost and then there's a hard freeze. So a little bit of frost, right. It sounds like we'll leave some things intact, but if it's actually going to get below 32 degrees, that's a different thing.
Right. And you can protect against those light frosts. In fact, I recommend it because oftentimes we'll have a few light frosts and then the temperatures will swing back up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've had months where we'd get a light frost in October and then you're still collecting stuff into November. So it's well worth it if you have materials like plastic sheeting or even, row covers. It's that white netting material that you mm-hmm. put over plants to keep bugs out, or even tarps or blankets. I've taken bed sheets out and covered my tomato vines with bed sheets on a frost warning, and that is enough to protect from a light frost. We get light frost even at 35 degrees here in the valley.
Mm-hmm.
And so all you need is something over the plants to catch that frost. And then once the temperature rises again in the morning, you've got a wet sheet or a wet blanket, you take it off and let it dry and save it for the next night. And you can extend your harvest for another, sometimes another month.
Wow.
Into November. If you forget, though, then the plants are going to take a hit.
Right.
And a light frost often will only damage the tops of the vines or the pepper plants or whatever, and all of the vegetation below because of the residual heat from the soil that's moving up through those plants. Those are protected.
Mm-hmm.
Once we get down below 32, and certainly once we get down in the 20s, that they're done. It's, you're going to go out and all those plants are going to be black. They're going to be gone.
Wow.
Including all the fruit on them. So you definitely, if you're planning to try and protect, you need to get some kind of good cover over for the light frost. And if you're going beyond that and you want to have stuff sustained through really killing frost, they need to move into a greenhouse or, be under some kind of a cover where you're actually putting in an extra heat source, like jugs of water that will retain heat and re-radiate it into the space that you've enclosed during the night.
Okay.
And
I should point out, too, just looking at the Weather Service stuff, it is talking 22 to 32 degrees in parts of the Rogue Valley for sure. So that
22 is, that's killer.
Yeah.
You're done.
Right. No ifs, ands,
or buts. Winter crops, of course, there are a lot. If you've planted winter crops, you don't have to worry about covering those. Overwintering cabbage, overwintering kale, overwintering broccoli, Brussels sprouts even, all of those will just go fine through those, even those really, really cold temperatures. I've been down to like 10 degrees even.
Wow.
Some of those vegetables are hardy. They're really tough. And so you don't have to worry about those. But your summer garden, it's going away.
Yeah.
Pretty darn quick here.
Yeah. This is the end of the summer garden. Okay, that is clear.
Yeah.
Lynn Kunzman, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange from Jackson County Master Gardeners Association, back for what is now a monthly visit with us through the colder part of the year. We hope to get her back weekly when things warm up again. You can join the conversation on the Exchange. Lots of gardening questions I'm seeing already. 800-838-3760 if you'd like to call by phone. And I think our phone system is working again. I tested it yesterday, but we did have some problems with university internet, and that affects our 6-line phone system, blah, blah, blah. 800-838-3760. Email is jx@jeffnet.org. And then Becca in Lane County asks, should I cover fall starts that were planted a couple of weeks ago? I would think they would be okay because they're meant to overwinter, but I'm not sure. I'm about 20 miles west of Eugene, elevation about 700 feet.
They should be fine.
Mm-hmm.
If you're talking about cabbage, kale, broccoli, those winter crops, that they're meant to, the reason you bought them at the nursery this time of year is that they're meant to go through the winter, and there's no need to cover those.
Okay.
You don't need to, except to keep the white flies off if you want to put Rime over them, but even the white flies are going to go away once the freezing temperatures come. So, those plants should be fine.
Okay. So white flies, really, they hang around until the hard freeze, huh?
Yeah, they can.
Yeah, I have to admit, I saw mosquitoes the other night, and it was feeling pretty chilly already, and they felt like they were the size of eagles, but that was that's a different story completely.
Yeah.
Let's see. There's an email here from Anne, no town given. She said, I was asked the following, and I'm torn between mulching under my row covers with straw or just leaving the soil bare. Mulching has many benefits, as you know, but also houses earwigs and perhaps other chewing pests. You think it matters? This is the question asked of Anne, and now Anne is turning it over to you, Lynn.
Yeah, I would always err on the side of keeping the soil covered, or really the best thing you can do is sow that area with a cover crop, winter peas or fava beans, because that's going to provide you nitrogen fixing in the soil. It's going to produce nitrogen nodules on those roots for the soil. And then you chop that down in the spring, let it decompose and turn it into the soil. You've added a green manure crop to your garden. So you've built the soil, you've sequestered carbon, you've protected, and the earwigs aren't going to be in there like they would under a mulch. You know, I think the second best option there would be to mulch and then pull that mulch back in the spring when you're ready to plant. But I think for everybody this time of year, I recommend everybody plant cover crops in all your garden beds to produce organic material, organic compost material for your next planting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So generally, I get the sense from our chats that it's best not to leave soil just exposed.
Yeah, I don't recommend that in a vegetable garden at all. There are areas in your other garden that you want to leave open for bees that nest in the ground. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to let your pollinators have access. But under your shrubs, in your garden beds, I recommend people keep a green manure crop or mulch on those once the soil warms up. You know, you want to keep those fertile, and it helps retain moisture and fertility in the soil.
Mm-hmm. Now, about earwigs in particular, as Ann was asking about, do those tend to end up in more moist places? I don't know many places earwigs don't seem to gather if it's confined and dark.
They seem to be everywhere, even in my kitchen. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, they get it. They come in with the vegetables, and they just seem to thrive everywhere. But yeah, they do. They are primarily, interestingly enough, earwigs are detritus eaters. Uh-huh. So the reason they're in your compost pile and under your leaves is they're eating vegetative material that's breaking down. Now, they will go after all your seedlings for sure. Uh-huh. They'll eat those too, and that's why they're a pain in the butt. But you know, earwigs for me, if you've got a healthy garden, and it takes a few years to get there, you're going to have beetle predators that are hunting those. And you're going to have other insects that are hunting those, even if you're lucky, salamanders and other little creatures, lizards and stuff, that will eat the earwigs. And then, of course, there's always earwig traps, which are half soy sauce, half oil, you know, a tuna can, buried at the rim level in the garden, and they will go to that and die in their thousands. So I don't worry too much about earwigs in the garden, and I make sure when I'm transplanting plants out in my garden, because I don't spray, and I want to avoid slug, snail, earwig damage, and I know I have them out there, I make sure my transplants are large and robust when I put them out, and I get them growing fast, so they're up and away from those, you know, seedling predators.
Okay, let's take a couple of calls here. We have Peter in Ashland on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Lynn Kunstman.
Hey, regarding your soil comment, a biology teacher of mine used to comment, I remember him making, was that nature abhors a void. Mm-hmm. And so if you ever see bare soil, then that's usually an indication that something's wrong there, toxicity,
okay,
potentially.
Oh, yeah, good idea, yeah.
The question I had was two questions, actually. I have a fig tree that I want to reduce. It's probably 20 feet across and 20 high, and I want to reduce it by about probably 80%. And after this frost, would you think that would be crazy to cut it down that much?
No, not at all. In fact, I've seen fig trees damaged by, here in the valley, completely killed back by those single-digit freezes that we have sometimes. Mm-hmm. And figs will regenerate from the roots. So you can cut that thing back as far as you need to. It's going to be fine.
And theoretically, do you think I could cut it? I know it's not ideal, but theoretically, you could cut a fig back in the middle of December and it would still be okay?
Absolutely. I mean, that's when they take the most freeze damage, and when they do, and like I said, I've seen whole trees killed to the ground, and they will regenerate
from
the roots.
Another one is regarding your master preserver skills. Is kind of interesting. When I first moved here 20 years ago, and there was a Persian family that lived next door, and they had these huge glass crocks that had fermented garlic in them. And when they moved in a flurry, they handed me one. I didn't know what to do with it at the time. I so regret that I ended up composting a lot of it because I was sort of nervous. And I've since heard that garlic can be garlic in particular can be dangerous to, you know, make sauerkraut or have it in any kind of fermentation. What do you know about that?
I do not know anything about that. I really can't speak to that. I know that you can ferment almost any kind of vegetable, and the thing with fermentation is that there's a certain degree of alcohol in there and a high kind of level of salt, and those things should be protective. And if the jar is well sealed, there's going to be a layer of CO2 from the fermentation sitting on top of that, so there shouldn't be any ability for oxygen, you know, and those kinds of things getting in. But I can't say for sure. I mean, my biology tells me that that should be okay because I've fermented lots of other things, you know, and have used them. But I don't know specifically about garlic. You'd have to do some research.
Okay. So thanks for those questions about the fig tree pruning and fermented garlic. And boy, there's a recipe here for fermented honey garlic. I'm liking the looks of this already. So another phone call here for Lynn Kunzman from Bill in Sutherland. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a comment on mulching. I haul 12 to 14 trailer loads of leaves home, mostly oak. I mulch all my trees. I have about 100-foot hedge in front of my property for privacy of roses. And I mulch all that, all my trees, my apple trees, and I never water.
Yeah, nice. Very nice.
So this is dry land farming, as it used to be known, apparently.
Yeah, right.
I don't like to leave bare ground.
Okay.
Oh, they're ground up?
I have a... I'm starting a grove of myrtlewood trees on my property, and I mulch all them, too.
Okay. So so the idea being here, Linda, to what? Keep the moisture in the soil without having to add water?
Sure. The mulch will just retain any water that falls in that area will percolate down into the soil, and the mulch keeps it from evaporating back up into the atmosphere. So, yeah, it's a great plan. I like to encourage people, if they can, to leave the leaves whole because we've got a ton of butterfly and moths overwintering in those in chrysalis form. And so if you're shredding leaves, those things are destroyed. So I like to have people put the leaves down whole. But if you have to put them down shredded, that's much better for the soil than if you've got nothing on it at all. So good for you. That's great.
All right, Bill, thanks for sharing that. You can still join the conversation with Lynn Kunzman and her gardening tips of the month at 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. Joy and Talent writes, I didn't have much success with a bird and butterfly mix. Are there any winter flowers I could try to kill?
Oh, she bought a bird and butterfly mix in a seed packet.
Those are,
and those packets are generally, you know, seeds that come from the eastern part of the U.S. or some other area. They're not necessarily native. For winter, there really aren't any wildflowers that you can plant, but I recommend you might be able to put out red clover right now, like right away. You can buy the seed, you know, locally at the nurseries. And it is a great crop that will start to grow now in the rains, then it'll stop it in the spring. It will bloom in this gorgeous red color, and then you cut it down when it's one-third in bloom so it doesn't reseed in your yard. It's an annual. It's not going to come back necessarily. But it provides great, great early winter forage for our early emerging bees, native bees. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So red clover.
Red clover.
Right now. Okay.
Or crimson clover, yeah.
And then from your old stomping grounds in Eureka, we have a question from Misha. She says she lives in Zone 9B. I'm wondering what vegetables I can grow in a greenhouse during the fall and winter months in my region. And Misha, I'm sorry if I got your gender wrong.
In a greenhouse over there on the coast, because the winters are more mild, you can grow all the winter crops. You can grow kale, cabbage, lettuce. All the salad greens, you know, all the cold crops. So, yeah, broccoli, probably, kohlrabi. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing that I need to point out to everybody, I want to make sure we cover this today. Right now is the time to be planting shallots and garlic in your garden right now. And you can do garlic all the way through November. Because those are bulbs, they're going to overwinter and then grow bigger as bulbs in the spring. And so you want to get those in the ground now and, you know, put a little bit of a light mulch over them and get them going.
Now, you took us through this before, and sorry, there have been a few interviews since. Tell us, can you take like commercial garlic bulbs and just stick those in the ground?
You could.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's no reason. Yeah, something that you bought at the store. They are just as likely to sprout on your countertop if you don't use them in time as the ones that the nurseries sell.
Yeah, I noticed that.
I don't know if the commercial ones have been treated in any way, but once they're in the ground, they should respond, you know, like any other garlic clove would respond and start sending up a shoot.
And what's the orientation then? I mean, does it matter facing up?
No, so, you know, when you're holding a head of garlic, the whole thing is called a head, and you're pulling off the little cloves. Uh-huh. You're planting each of those individual little cloves that will become an entire head of garlic.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to put the pointy part up and the part that has the little scale that you have to cut off at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
You put that down because that's where the roots are going to grow. So point up in the ground and cover them about an inch and they'll take off.
Now, this is why you're a master gardener. You can say things like pointy part up and help those of us who are total novices understand better.
Pointy part up. All of us have snatched cloves of garlic to put in food, and we know what the pointy end is and what the flat end with the little scale on the bottom looks like. So,
exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. Okay, I'm going to have to save till next time the questions about designing your garden to limit frost damage, but there are apparently some things. You mentioned the jugs of water. That got me thinking about that part of
right,
it. But
right.
We'll have to hang that up for next time, and so we'll have you back in November, and we can talk about the things that go on in gardens in November. Lynn Kunstman is from the Jackson County Master Gardeners, joining us monthly through the winter to talk about gardening activities. Lynn, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for coming back.
Thanks a lot.
All right, take care. That will do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. Hour number two coming up is about the United States and how the United is more or less an aspirational kind of term. We'll talk to the author of the book Break It Up about our moves towards secession over the years. That's coming up in the second hour of the Jefferson Exchange, starting shortly.